It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
And good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We are going to hear an update on the state of the opioid epidemic in Tuolumne County with Tuolumne County Public Health Officer Dr. Kimberly Freeman. She's going to break down the local stats and tell us about the situation here locally. Dr. Freeman, welcome back to Motherlode Views.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you back on. Roughly how long now have you been in the public health officer position?
A little over a year and a half now.
So we want to talk about the opioid epidemic. I know that that's something that you talked about recently at a Board of Supervisors meeting. What is kind of the situation here in Tuolumne County?
The situation is improving, but still dire. We just received the 2022 data a couple of weeks ago, and it shows that while in 2021, for some of the metrics, we were the worst, we were worst for six of them, we're now only worse for two of them. So this is an improvement, but we are still in the top three for five of those metrics. The metrics that I'm looking at primarily are morphine milligram equivalents, which talks about basically the type and amount of opioids that are prescribed in the area. We are still worse for that, and we're still worse for overlapping prescribed opioids. We dropped a second for residents over 90 morphine milligram equivalents, third for opioid and benzo co-prescriptions, and number of opioid prescriptions. Luckily, our overdose rates dropped to 19th and 29th, and we were first and second for those in 2021. These are all per capita.
Interesting. Any reasons why that happened, the overdose rate?
I can't say for sure. It's really hard. We have small numbers anyway, so even one less in a year is a large percentage change. I think that there's a couple of different trends going on. Nationally, there has been a drop in rates. However, we dropped faster than other places in California. I think the increased availability of Narcan out there, we do know that there's been more Narcan distribution and use in the last year. I think that that might be saving some of our overdose deaths, but I can't say for sure why else that has dropped.
Then the local statistics that you're mentioning, have you noticed anything between like rural areas in the state as opposed to more urban areas? Do they kind of go in packs or are they often different?
The rural areas do tend to be worse in general, and I don't have a good reason for that. That's been true for a long time, and that's true for smoking and vaping and all kinds of other ills. It is true that the urban areas are a little bit more progressive on this. And I think that might have to do with academic centers. And so the newer trained docs and providers out there are trained in better ways to do or more updated ways to do pain management with less opioids.
You know, what are the concerns of having a higher rate locally as opposed to other parts of the state?
Well, the concerns, obviously, are if we have more being prescribed, our potential overdoses are higher. In addition, we know that despite that not being as high now, there are more complications with higher opioid use. For instance, any kind of medical visits for GI disturbance or other things, the ability to be effective at work, the ability to not drive under the influence, all those things are affected by how much prescription opioid is out there.
So as a public health officer, you have all these stats. What do you kind of do with them? And are there kind of actions and things that take place behind the scenes to try to address this issue?
We're doing a lot to address this issue behind the scenes. We just got through Red Ribbon Week, and myself and one of our program specialists from tobacco were out in the schools talking about not only opioids, but also tobacco and vaping and marijuana to try to help influence the youngsters of our community to not start these things. In addition, I have been doing a lot of outreach to clinics and training and partnering with people at the hospital to get more education out to providers and patients in ways that they can manage their pain or other things without opioids or other prescriptions.
Is it hard to get off opioids once you are using those for pain medication?
It's very difficult to get off for a number of reasons. One, they're addictive, but two, they affect your dopamine levels. And so your dopamine is one of your happy hormones and very much influenced by the things that you take. if you are taking opioids for a long period of time, your ability to make your dopamine goes down. So it's not just coming off the medication, it's how yucky you feel because your dopamine levels are down. If you've been a long-term user, it will take a couple years for those to come back.
You know, what is kind of the advice for those long-term users who want to get off the drugs but just can't seem to do it?
There's various ways that you can get help locally. There's clinics, Matheson, the Rural Health Clinic at the hospital, Miwok, all have addiction providers that can help change those prescriptions in a way to not go through withdrawal, but also to help with the dopamine levels and get people effectively reduced or changed on their medications to something better for them.
Anything else interesting that stand out in those stats that you have at your disposal?
The interesting thing is, despite being number one for morphine milligram equivalents, which has been true for Tuolumne County for 6 years, we have come down significantly. In the past year, we went from 800 approximately morphine milligram equivalents per resident to 698 for 2022. So that's a drop of 100. That's a lot. MME, for instance, if we estimate 700 morphine milligram equivalents per resident in 2022, that's the equivalent of 70 Norco 10s being prescribed every single man, woman, and child in the county. So it's still a lot. It's more than twice the state, but it is improving.
Do you know, have there been like many studies like how easy or how quickly you can get addicted to opioid drugs?
There have been some studies, and it is somewhat dependent on the reasons for getting started in the first place. But one of the things that came out a couple of years ago was the number of days of prescription after, you know, a valid event, a surgery or a broken bone, and how likely you were to be addicted 1 in 3 years later. For just 5 days of prescription opioid, you have a 5% chance of being addicted 1 year later, which is pretty high. 15 days is about 20%. And that's used to be the standard, that you'd get a couple weeks worth of opioid. That has really come down in the standard of care to be just a few days of opioids now, because that is such a high risk.
If somebody in the community was prescribed opioid drugs and they're no longer using them, they don't want them to get in the wrong hands, are there any things that they have to keep in mind about disposing these type of drugs?
It's best to dispose them in a locked box, a place to take them. It's not really a great idea to flush them and put them into the water system. The hospital pharmacy and the sheriff's offices have those boxes. And twice a year, we also do drug take back days. No questions asked, drop anything you want in there. Any medications, including, you know, cardiac drugs or other things that might be in grandpa's cabinet, are dangerous for kids to get into. So they all should be disposed of if they're not being used. Those boxes take anything that is pill form, not liquid or syringes.
Do you know quite a few people take advantage of those drug drop-off days?
We have had a lot of people taking advantage. Our last one was just this last Saturday, and I haven't heard stats on it. But we usually take back thousands of pills in a given day.
That's great. We're talking about the opioid epidemic in Tuolumne County with a lot of local statistics. We're joined on the program this weekend by Kimberly Freeman, Tuolumne County Health Officer. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherload Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our second segment is coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
Welcome back to Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're joined on the program this weekend by Tuolumne County Public Health Officer, Dr. Kimberly Freeman, getting into a number of topics on this weekend show. During the first segment, we talked a lot about the opioid epidemic locally in Tuolumne County. Dr. Freeman, before we get on to other topics, you know, Tuolumne County, when it comes to the high opioid numbers that you were mentioning during the first segment, are we kind of like just an island here, or are you seeing similar things in the other foothill counties?
So as far as prescriptions written, we are an island and much higher than other counties in the state. As far as prescriptions consumed, it's very much a Motherload region problem, with Tuolumne County, Calaveras County, and Amador County being three out of the top five for recipients of those prescriptions.
Interesting. You know, getting into some other topics, we are now in the midst of the heart of fall and heading into the winter season. You know, what are you observing right now when it comes to, you know, issues around flu and colds and that type of thing?
We are starting to see a little uptick in some of the respiratory diseases, the most being COVID right now. We had a little uptick recently, and amongst the pediatric population as well. We have had some sick kids at the hospital. So highly recommended to make sure that you're following the precautions that have been stated for a long time, you know, washing your hands. If you're sick, you know, stay out of other people's airways and getting vaccinated. Flu hasn't come up yet, but the flu vaccine is available and would be great to get that taken care of too before the flu season kicks in. There is also a brand new vaccine out for RSV. Last year, we had a very impactful RSV season, and that is something that has happened seasonally for eons. There is now a new vaccine available for those that are over 60 years old. There is it becoming in the works for the pregnant population, but it has not fully been rolled out yet. This can help a lot with the RSV diseases, which are most impactful for the infants and the elderly.
Yeah, I had heard a lot about the RSV for infants. It also highly impacts the elderly population as well?
It does, and we didn't actually know that until they were testing a lot for COVID and including RSV tests. Now that we have had that data for the last couple of years, we know that RSV actually is pretty impactful as far as a disease goes for the elderly.
How about the COVID vaccine? Is that something that's still offered through public health?
The COVID vaccine is still offered through public health. Unfortunately, with the commercialization of the vaccine, it's now only available for uninsured and underinsured, meaning that if you have any copay, then you can be eligible to get it at public health. The pharmacies locally do offer it otherwise.
What are kind of the recommendations right now? Is it the COVID vaccine for everyone? Or I don't know, there's a new vaccine as well. Is that certain age groups? How does that work?
There was an updated version rolled out in September. And so they are considering, they changed the language to being fully vaccinated to being updated. And so having had one dose of the update makes you updated. If you had ever had the series, that's still considered fully vaccinated. But the update is including some of the more recent variants to help protect people in the future.
And that new vaccine, is that for all ages?
The new vaccine is for all ages, yes.
Okay. And then is there any way to tell kind of ahead of time what your flu and cold season is going to look like? Do you know, or are there studies that look at that?
There, I was just on a meeting this morning about the projections, and they give projections that are high, medium, low, but it's not really well known. The flu vaccine, though, is based upon what was circulating in the southern hemisphere during their flu season. So we develop in the United States, we develop the flu vaccine based on that and hope it's a good match so that it can help prevent disease. It is believed this year it's going to be a good match, but the projections, I think, are not easy to state are truly accurate until it actually hits us.
Okay. Yeah, up until a few years ago, when I get a flu shot, I'd usually get it at the health fair locally, and that health fair has been gone since the COVID pandemic. What is kind of the status? Is there plans to bring that back at some point?
Yes, good question. We are bringing back the health fair. It is currently planned for March. It will be on a Friday and Saturday in March. And at that time, obviously, it will be near the end of the flu vaccine or the flu season, so we won't be offering the flu vaccine. But the traditional way of having health vendors that screen for diseases or help offer education, that has coming back and focus more on education prevention.
So coming back in the springtime, do we know it will always be in the spring or could it eventually go back to the fall?
We like to do it in the fall because we like to do our mass vaccination for flu in the fall. However, the hospital also, the Discover Life Church, also restarted their clinic, and they did their Life Hope Church clinic in September. So we don't want to compete with that, nor do we want to have residents not be offered the value of a health fair that might be 6 months apart. They used to do theirs in the early spring or in January. So we'll see how that cadence falls out after this coming year in 2024.
And I've heard a little bit mentioned about a mobile health van. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we have a grant at Public Health called the Local Indigent Care Needs Grant. And with that, we have a van that we will be rolling out very soon. We're getting the last details taken care of, that will be going out to help coordinate care and do screenings, healthcare screenings for anybody who wants to come to the van that's an adult. It's not for children. We are planning to go to areas that are needing those services, where homeless might be, or people with access problems. You know, in Groveland, they have trouble driving down the hill, for instance. So we are planning to get into the areas of the county where we can make the most impact.
Do you know, is it going to be like at set places on different days, or will it just rotate to different areas?
It will be rotating to different areas. The schedule hasn't rolled out yet. We're trying to coordinate with other things like food banks or other outreach where we might be able to reach more people.
And that'll be kind of like a walk-in type thing as opposed to making an appointment?
Correct.
Okay. Anything else in the health department keeping you busy these days?
Otherwise, I'd like to say that the Not My Kid event is coming up on November 8th in the evening. This was very impactful when it rolled out in April and is coming back by popular demand. A great free event for anybody who's a parent, especially of teenagers, to help with our parenting skills and the mental health of our children. It's going to be offered at Sierra Bible Church, free, and free childcare and free food. So all good reasons to come learn more about how to help our children be the best that they can be.
Yeah, great, great event in the community. You mentioned mental health. Does that kind of fall under public health officer as well, all encompassing position?
You know, there is the behavioral health department and the social services department that deal more specifically with that. But everything that we deal with in public health can go back to mental health as well. For instance, circling back on addiction, we know that people who have had high ACE scores, adverse childhood experience scores, are more likely to be depressed, anxious, or addicted. So a lot of the work that I am trying to roll out also has to do with impacting our children and preventing or minimizing their ACE score so they can not have those ailments as adults.
A couple months ago, we had some behavioral health folks on talking about the Care Cord. Are you involved with Care Cord at all as health officer?
Not directly.
Okay.
However, in my role as EMS medical director, we are not mandated. We are reporters that we can help clients get into that kind of care depending on how they present to emergency medical services. So we undergo training with our paramedics and EMTs on how best to do that.
Need to take one more break. We're talking with Dr. Kimberly Freeman, Tuolumne County Public Health Officer, on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host.
And a programming note, next week on Motherlode Views, we're going to be joined by a pair of guests from the Sonora Chamber of Commerce. We'll be joined by the president, Katie Dunn, as well as one of the committee members for Christmastown, Ann Segerstrom. They're going to talk about the holiday activities that are planned over the coming months and just kind of an update from the Sonora Chamber of Commerce. That's next week on Motherlode Views. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our final segment is coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
Welcome back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're on our final segment on this weekend show. We're talking about public health issues, joined on the program this week by Dr. Kimberly Freeman. She is the Tuolumne County Health Officer for Tuolumne County. Dr. Freeman, earlier, I know you mentioned the word ACEs is in relation to children. Can you talk a little bit about that, what that is, and some of the things that you're working on in that realm?
Yeah, so ACEs stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. If a person goes online and searches for that, there's a 10-question questionnaire about what is believed to be some of the most impactful things that can happen to a child that could adversely affect them as an adult. There was a big study done decades ago on this, which showed that if somebody had more than four ACEs, they were much more likely to have all kinds of health ailments, but especially depression, anxiety, and addiction. So it circles back to our opioid issue potentially. There has not been a significant number of surveys from our county, but what has been turned in shows a generally high ACE score. So this is quite concerning as well. And on the background, we are working on the things that we can do to help minimize the ACEs and maximize parenting so that those things can be mitigated as best as possible. There is now a training available from the Office of the Surgeon General that anybody can take. It's being rolled out to the teachers and other child care providers in the state. But you can go online, and they're 2-hour modules, but you can start and stop wherever you want. They're for different age groups. There's a 0-5, 6-11, and 12-18. So anybody who wants to learn more about it or be able to be more effective in either recognizing it or minimizing it can have that free training available to them.
Those high ACEs numbers, is that something you work with like the local schools with in regards to?
Not directly, but yes, indirectly, and probably much more with behavioral health or social services, not as much with public health. But it's definitely something that we recognize that anybody could be a victim of trauma, and we do our trainings in a way to be informed about that and be sensitive to it. We do know that anybody who has 4 or more ACEs are much more likely to be impacted as adults. So we are working with behavioral health and social services to decrease that impact.
When we kicked off the show, we talked about the state of the opioid epidemic in Tuolumne County and mentioned that was something that you had brought forward to the Board of Supervisors at a recent meeting. Are there any other topics that you're planning to bring forward to the board soon?
Yes, good question. Next week on November 7th, we are talking about tobacco. A couple members of the public health group and myself are talking about tobacco and discussing the possibility of a tobacco retail license, which is on the board to decide, but we'll be talking about what that means.
What is a retail license for tobacco?
A retail license would be a license that is enacted by ordinance where the retailers would need to pay a certain amount yet to be determined if they decide to move forward with that. And that allows for enforcement and other things that the current retail license that they pay to the state, none of that comes back locally. We do know that a lot of the high schoolers, we have much higher rate of vaping and tobacco use. And so we are hoping that we can decrease that by any means. And maybe this is one of the methods to do so. A lot of rural counties have enacted such a thing.
I remember years ago hearing about how our percentage of tobacco use was much higher than most of the rest of the state, similar to the opioid use, as you talked about. Is it still that way? Have you seen any recent stats or studies on that?
Yes, it is still that way. Tobacco by cigarettes has been coming down a bit, but vaping has gone up quite a bit, and it's just as dangerous, if not worse.
Okay. Any other issues that you plan to bring to the board?
In December, we are coming back to the board with the opioid issue, the opioid litigation funds from the companies that sold all the pills and created a lot of addiction problems. We have some funds in our county from that, and we will be asking the board for direction on how to dispense those.
So no decision yet has been decided on how to spend those?
Only a small piece has been carved out for the Opioid Safety Coalition, but the rest of it is still yet to be decided.
Do they give you certain areas that you have to spend that money on or general rules?
Yes, there is a not too uncomplicated set of rules where there's high impact versus low impact uses. And 50% has to be at least in the high impact category. And the rest of it is low impact. It's a bit more to discuss in our brief time than that. But yes, there's rules.
Very good. You know, as public health officer, you have to, you know, cover the whole area of public health. You know, one thing I know you've put out reports on regarding sexually transmitted diseases. Are there any concerning areas in that topic that you're seeing lately?
So sexually transmitted diseases are always concerning because we certainly don't want those to be passed along, nor do we want them to affect an infant that's just being born. In general, throughout the state, syphilis has gone up, including for us, and there is some concern because the penicillin that we would use, especially in pregnant women, is not as easily available. There's a national shortage. So we are working on, you know, continuing prevention, which will be part of the local indigent care needs van, as well as investigating those so that we can minimize any of the spread of disease.
Also curious, are you planning to put together more work on a community health assessment anytime soon?
We have been working on our community health assessment as a public health entity. That is something that we are to do every 5 years. We're wrapping up our assessment now and moving straight into our improvement plan based on the assessment. So there'll be more out publicly about that in a few months.
How are those documents used, those community health assessments?
For us in public health, we use them to help inform our improvement plan so that within the resources we have and the program we have, what are the needs of our community? What are the priorities that the community believes are best for us to focus on? And we use that assessment to inform the improvement plan and the way that we'll roll out what resources we do have.
So is that something you work with like the local providers in the county to develop, or is it something that you do independently and then show it to them afterwards?
We do work with the community partners and with the hospital on the plan as well as what we will roll out. There's many committees that are held for that as well as community input. We did have a survey in April from the community on what they felt were the priorities that is informing our assessment as well.
You know, we've been talking about different things that you're involved with on the show. What is kind of the overall role of a county public health officer?
Oh, it's very broad, and it's very different depending on the jurisdiction. You won't see a health officer doing the same thing in LA as you will in a rural area. Very much based upon what the community needs, but also the core roles of disease investigation and whether or not we need to test for rabies in certain people and those types of things, that all remains the same. The priorities, is such as opioids here, is more informed by what the community needs.
Is a typical day changing all the time for you?
Yes. many different meetings, many different projects, and no day looks the same.
You know, how has the experience been as a public health officer? Because you came in right kind of at the tail end of COVID, and COVID was a period where health officers were leaving the position right and left, and people were getting, you know, let go and that type of thing. What how's it been as a public health officer?
I have really enjoyed it. We have a great public health department. I love the people I work with. I also come from a background of emergency medicine, and that was very much doing things after people had made bad decisions or were in their trauma. And being on the prevention side and trying to prevent those things is very rewarding and a lot of fun to get out in the community and talk with people and work on how to prevent ACEs or how to help reduce the driving under the influence or other opioids or things like that.
I know you talked about this when you were on about a year ago, but if anybody who's unfamiliar with you, you know, what was your background before you became a health officer?
Oh, thank you. My background as a college student, not knowing what I wanted to do, I decided to join the fire department as a volunteer and loved it. From that point, I went on to become an emergency medical tech and went to med school and became a paramedic and a doctor, emergency medicine residency, and now I'm been director of emergency medical services locally since 2015, and then came into the health officer role last year after working in the emergency department, as well as directing a local clinic for several years.
Just curious about kind of operations too, you know. Do you rely pretty heavily, County Public Health Department, on grant funding, depending on what you can do, or how does that play into things?
We do rely heavily on grant funding, and those grants inform us on what we need to do with the money. We are constantly looking for other grants and ways we can roll out money into the local community based on what's available.
And then flu shot season, you know, you can still get those at the Public Health Department, you
yes.
said?
Yes. Anybody can get flu shot at the public health department. On our website is the phone number to call and to the dates and times that those are offered.
How young can you get a flu shot?
6 months is the earliest.
And it's encouraged for anybody after 6 months?
It's encouraged for anybody, yes. Flu is not a necessary disease to have, and it's just miserable. So I do encourage anybody to avoid it.
Do they still do different things like a shot and a spray being two separate things you can get?
The shot is the standard. The spray is only for a certain subset of age group because of the risks that can be involved. Currently at the health department, we just have the shot.
Okay. Well, as we wrap up today, we've hit on a number of topics. Any closing comments you'd like to make?
BJ, I appreciate you having me on, and I encourage anybody in the public who has questions to contact me through the public health department. I'm here for the community and serving, and would love to know what it is that we should focus on. If you don't feel like we're doing what we should, or if you feel like we should do something different, please let us know.
We appreciate you coming on and answering any and all questions. We thank Dr. Kimberly Freeman, Public Health Officer for Tuolumne County, for joining us on Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen. I was your host. We'll see you back next week for more Motherload Views.
You've been listening to Motherload Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherload. Motherload Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.